My name's Jonathan Alley.
Hi, Jonathan.
Thanks to me for taking the meeting. Thanks for being here. I was wondering if anyone ever sits down here and says, I've been really looking forward to this. You know, I mean, since I was asked, you know, counting down the days. Because I haven't, you know what I mean? But I woke up today and I kind of think, you know what I mean? I get nervous, and I wonder why do I get nervous speaking, you know what I mean? And what I've worked out as is I feel a lot of passion for recovery and for NA, and I don't want to let myself down, I don't want to let you down, you know what I mean? Because I used to have this sponsor, Michael Tim, and he used to have this like reoccurring dream where he'd come, like, he'd turn up at meeting venues, and the meeting went on. You know what I mean? It's a wonderful life where the guy turns up and he says, you know, but there used to be a bar here. He says, no bar here, mate. You know what I mean? He'd turn up, you know, Hind Street and all these places, there's no meetings. And they'd say to him, there's no, what, NA? AA? What are you on about? You're bonkers, mate. And he'd be kind of, you have this dream, and he's telling me about the dream. And I think about that some mornings when I wake up, where would I be without NA? You know what I mean? And, I think, you know, to speculate, I've become like a very bitter and twisted man who maybe uses, maybe don't, but kind of bumps along the bottom of life, getting more and more bitter and resentful and blaming and all them defects and all that nonsense. I might use, I might not, who knows, you know what I mean? But I think I'd be well and truly fucked, you know what I mean, whichever way you slice it. And I was talking to a sponsee the other day, and I think life and death is not a black and white issue. I don't think you're dead or alive. You know, you're either dead or alive. I think you can be alive, but you're dead. Your spirit is really fucked. Your spirit is dead. But you're just tramping around, you know what I mean, in a body. You know what I mean? And at the end of my using, that's how I was just tramping around in this body, you know what I mean? And if you said to me, there's a button here, John, you can press this button, and your life will just be erased. There'll be no fuss. You know, you're not committing suicide, you'll just delete your life. I would have deleted my life. I had no, you know, I had no kind of sort of like lust for life, no kind of appetite for life. I was really like, there was nothing left in the tank. And I gave using a very good go. I tried my best, you know what I mean? But I was not a very good addict. I was not a very good using addict. When I was a kid, I'll start when I was a kid, right, I'd come into the world. I was talking to a psychologist one day, and he was talking to me about, he says, some people can remember being in the womb. And I said, fucking hell. It was a real revelation to me, because I think I can remember being in the womb, right? And it was safe, and it was warm, and it was nice in the womb. And then it was cut to, I was in with this family I was born into, where my mum and my dad used to just fight. You know, it was like they just fight all the fucking time. She used to wake him up by pouring boiling water over him. He was like a kind of like alcoholic who didn't ever come drink until he was 23, and then he told me he made up for lost time. They just fought the whole time, and I was terrified. And my mate Paul G used to talk about growing up in an atmosphere of fear. And I got that, and I was hardwired from an early stage, you know what I mean, just to be terribly, terribly scared of life and people and grown-ups and kids my age, and, you know, just very, very, very scared. And, I was completely baffled by life from the beginning. And, my dad left when I was about two or three, I don't know. My mum tried to bring up me and my brother, and we was kind of like quite feral. And she would kind of act out, she would rage, and she kind of like, she'd just act out. What she needed was not a good talking to, but a good listening to. You know what I mean? She had no one in her life who didn't come into her life and judge the fuck out of her. You know what I mean? She was this kind of woman from rural Ireland who was trying to do the best she could, you know, to bring up these two kids who were just kind of wild. And we would, you know, she would have nervous breakdowns, she she would have nervous breakdowns on a regular basis. She would tell us stuff that we was from other planets, and that, you know, a lot of people would get inside your head, and we was possessed, and real kind of mad stuff when you're about 6 or 7. Really kind of quite insane stuff. And I've always had this thing, well, you know, even now, I've got a fear of kind of madness and going mad. That's why I don't use drugs that send me mad. Do you know what I mean? That's why I don't, you know, I don't want to go there to take myself over to the precipice once again, you know what I mean? Because I kind of got a feeling I kind of got away with it, and I don't want to go back there, you know what I mean? And I think when I was about 7 or 8, my mum tried to strangle me. And I went to school, and one of the teachers saw that I had these kind of burn marks around my neck. And they, the teachers, kind of informed the welfare, you know what I mean? And we got taken off to this kind of Catholic orphanage, and my mum got taken off to kind of like a hospital, you know, a mental hospital. And I felt very conflicting emotion to have been taken off to this orphanage. And I felt thrilled being in a car, because I'd never been in a car before. And I felt very guilty that I brought this lot upon my family. Do you see what I mean? I kind of thought, like, you know, you should have just been able to... I was trying to cover this up, and the teacher was spotting it. I felt I'd let the family down, you know, the unit down. So we was in the... we was in the kind of like orphanage, the Christian or Catholic orphanage, which is as fucking bad as it sounds. And don't get me started on religion, you know what I mean? Because, you know, Catholics and all that, you know what I mean? But nuns and priests and stuff like that, because it was fucking horrendous, you know what I mean? And it stabbed in something that was already there. I had this real fear of kind of authority figures. I had a kind of hatred of authority figures. I had a kind of hatred of grown-ups. No one was giving me any kind of useful information. No one was telling me I was lovable. No one told me I deserved anything. Everyone told me I should be terribly ashamed. I was ashamed of my thoughts. I was ashamed of my bodily functions. I was ashamed of my penis. I was ashamed of fucking everything. And then they told me that God can hear your thoughts. So I thought, now I'm on proper fucked. You know what I mean? He can hear what I'm thinking. And if you're not thinking nice things, you're down to fucking hell, right? And then he says, if you're a bad person, bad things will happen to you. And I thought, bad things are happening to me, so I must be a bad person. That's why I work now, I'm wrong. Do you know what I mean? So that's what I thought as a sort of like 7 or 8 year old kid. And, you know, that is the stuff. I've got a sponsor, and he comes sort of, strangely enough, he believes very much that kind of Jesuit thing, you know, give me the child and I'll give you the man. That the first 7 years of your life are incredibly, incredibly powerful. Because the decisions you make will be based on the last decision that you made, and the decision before that one, and the decision before that. So, and there's no reset button to say, poof, let's not make good decisions, you know, loving decisions. So, well, I recently, a couple of years ago, that's recently in recovery, you know what I mean? Recently, 2 years ago, I'd done a step four on the first 10 years of my life, and it unravelled a great deal of stuff. I'd done step fours about my life, you know, my using and all that kind of stuff, but this was kind of going back specifically, talking about that stuff, the first 10 years of my life, and, you know, the thinking that was kind of like put in, that was kind of sort of like sheared into my brain. You know what I mean? That you're unlovable, you're worth less than other people. Other people's opinions, thoughts are more important than yours. You know, their welfare is more important than you. You know what I mean? You're just like, you know, God doesn't like you. You know what I mean? So I believed in God, but I also believed that God didn't like me. You know what I mean? You know, I went to big school, I started getting a bit flash, I started getting a bit, you know, I mean, being able to bully people, you know, and I thought, you know, I mean, I was being bullied, this is how it operates, you know, hurt people, you know what I mean, so I was doing okay, you know what I mean, and then, you know, they come in and they want to talk about drugs, and I thought to myself, they kind of say, look, this is a very bad thing, you know what I mean, if you take this, you know, you'll just lie on the floor and feel nothing, and you take this and you dance all night, and you take this and you'll see fucking unicorns and dragons and all that, and I thought, fucking can't wait. It was probably not the desired effect, you know what I mean? They probably desired to put me off taking these things. But to me, it was like a kind of one of those infomercials, you know what I mean? Where they say, this is, you know, this is what you've got to look forward to. That's how I took it. I couldn't wait to get out of my head, you know what I mean? And I was a big fantasist, you know, everything was about fantasy, everything was about avoiding reality. I didn't want to take responsibility. I thought my plan of action was I was going to be discovered. You know, I mean, I didn't know in what field, but I was going to be discovered. That was how I was going to get through life. You know, I mean, I was going to be famous for something. I'm not sure what yet. And that was my plan. And when I first started taking drugs, it was like I started drinking alcohol. I used to drink cider. Very sweet cider, and we used to put fag ash in it because someone said to us that it makes it stronger. Whereas people who ain't addicts would say that is gross, we'd say, no, no, that sounds good. It might work. And we'd take pills if it said that do not operate machinery or drive. We'd say, okay, give me one. Yeah, give me that. You know what I mean? Doing mad stuff, you know what I mean? All that kind of just wanting to kind of change the way I felt. We used to do this thing where kind of like you'd have to breathe in really quickly, in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out for about a minute, and then your mate would squeeze the remaining air out of you. So you'd come into some kind of, not a trance, but some kind of fit. You know what I mean? And you think, oh, that's fucking great, let's do it again kind of thing. It was very kind of, you know, bonkers, but just wanted to change the way I feel. I wasn't comfortable. What I've worked out now is what I was feeling was incredible, incredible shame. And then shame is that feeling where you feel kind of overexposed, underprotected, that you're transparent, people can come and look inside you and see. You know what I mean? And the difference between guilt and shame is guilt. You get guilt if you make a mistake. But shame is, I am the mistake. I'm just wrong. You know what I mean? And there's no putting me right. I'm wrong. You know what I mean? So when I just wanted to use drugs that made me feel like I wasn't a mistake, that I wasn't right, that I could kind of take flight, that I could be bigger, I could be bolder, I could take them all on, you know what I mean? I like drugs that kind of like speed and coke and booze that made me fearless, you know what I mean? I was like a tin man, you know, I want guts. That's what I wanted. I smoked a lot of dope, and I kind of think, this is a kind of strange thing, but this hierarchy of drugs business, you know what I mean? I don't agree with it, because to me, smoking weed or smoking like kind of black, I turn up around this kind of person who sold dope's house, like a dealer, she's a bit dope dealer, and I turn up, knock knock, I hope she's got a nice bit of grass, smoke a nice bit of weed, that'd be great, you know, come, what have you got? I've got this black, and I know this black sends me, I'm completely introverted, I can't talk, totally inhibited, right, stare at the wall, right, oh that'd be great. Right. Skin up, now I'm really paranoid, completely fucking paranoid, fucking paranoid. My only solution is to skin up again. Right? So now, every little bit of last remaining bit of self-worth or dignity or good thing I've got going on in my life, I'll sit there and I'll fucking hunt it down and dismantle it. Yeah, so then I'll think I'm a ghost, I'm a skeleton, I'm a fucking, I'm a toopy for another world. I'm thinking mad shit, do you know what I mean? Then I'm skinning up again. Think, oh, fucking hell, I'm scared of myself, you know what I mean? So, when people say, well, I've done this and I've done that, I think, if you've got, you know, when I'm talking about that stuff, about being strangled as a kid and beaten up as a kid, and my mum, you know, here's the thing, right? When I was a kid, my mum used to kind of beat me up. Now, there was a degree of spite in her beating me up. Now, spite is where you enjoy inflicting pain. Yeah? Spiteful. She was spiteful with it. So when I'm fucking stunned and I'm reliving that, it's not the best place to be. But I'm volunteering to do it. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm an addict. And I just want to change the way I feel. Because if I'm just left to my own devices and I just wake up in the morning, I'm full of shame And, you know, like, you know, so I'm, you know, I'm fucked if I do and I'm fucked if I don't, basically. So that's kind of sort of where I come from. And then the decision that day was based on the information I had from the past. So I was never all that good at making decisions. I wanted to be away from people. I was a terrible procrastinator about everything. Like, at the end of school, when I worked in a clothes shop, take six on Wardle Street, selling big flares, like big flares. And I'd get £24 a week, £24.50 a week, and on Monday morning I'd be asking the manager for a sub. So can I have a sub on that? He said, what do you do with that? And I said, well, I don't really know. I'd kind of just drink, I'd go to blackout, 16. I was running around Soho, I'd end up in some mad places, you know what I mean? Sometimes I'd get home, sometimes I wouldn't. I'd get in a lot of trouble, you know what I mean? It's all like, I kind of enjoyed it as it goes, you know what I mean? It's all like, so, and then punk come along, so, you know, that was that, you know what I mean? Everything changed, you know what I mean? And I just kind of thought, well, okay, well, I've got a job on the council, because, you know, civilization was going to finish, you know what I mean? It was all going to change, that's what I thought. I took it very seriously. And but I went into all these different scenes, but all the thing that, you know, it really kind of cut to the chase here is like my addiction progressed, it progressed. I was in different clubs with different haircuts, with different people, with different clothes, different drugs, but underneath it, you know what I mean, what was growing is a fucking self-hatred. If someone says to me, have you got low self-worth? I can't think, no, I don't have low self-worth. I have a vicious self-contempt. I'd like being with someone who says, you're a cunt. It's one thing to sort of, you know, low self-worth. But I kind of, when I first came in, I lived with someone who just wants to slag me off all the time. You know what I mean? It's like, and that's what I had, and it was growing, and it was growing, and it was growing. My isolation was growing, and I couldn't tell anyone what was going on, and I just increasingly more and more baggage, you know what I mean? And then I was 31, and a guy came around my house, and he said to me, and he was kind of, he had a club not far from here, and we'd been to school together, and we'd known each other since we was 11 years of age, and he knocked on the door, he says, look, John, this is a story, we're not insane, we're addicts. You know, I mean, a part of me thought that was very good news, and the other part of me thought, you know, what the fuck are you on about? That's a really mad thing to say. And he took me to a meeting up in Mill Lane on Friday night, and the guy was doing the chair, and I'd met the guy before, and he was a little bit, he was like one of the chaps, you know what I mean, and he was a little bit. And he was talking about, I'm powerless over my addiction, I'm powerless. One's too many, a thousand never enough. And I thought to myself, fuck me, he's got something there. Well, you know, he's cracked this. Because the thing was, is I always got the thousand never enough. Because sometimes I'd big bits of drugs, and other times I had no drugs. And if I was in a pub and I had money, I'd always think, hey, the money's going to run out, or they're going to throw me out, or at some point this is going to run out. So I always got the thousand never enough. What I didn't get was the ones too many. Because what I was doing the last 5 years of my using was I was going on the wagon, or I'm swearing off, or because I'd do these things where I'd go out, I'd drink, I'd do a load of coke, I'd get in blackout, I'd start a fight, I'd get my jaw broken, I wouldn't know where I'd been. I thought the family illness, which was kind of schizophrenia, was kicking in. So when someone says to me, you're not insane, you're an addict, I think, okay, I'm going to run with this for a little while. It was a relief. So we went to this meeting, and the guy doing the chair, once too many, a thousand, never enough. Because I used to kind of swear off and stuff like that and say, look, I've had a real mad week or a mad few weeks. And it was real, you know, like, you know, when people used to say, when I first heard this word, you're an addict, and I said, look, I don't do heroin. I had a little dabble with heroin, and I thought if I carry on, I would end up an addict, right? Now, what they said to me was, look, our definition of an addict is, can you control your use of drugs? Can you control when you start? Can you control? And once I started, I couldn't control. I didn't use every day. But once I started, I was off. You know what I mean? I was off up and running, you know what I mean? And then it would all come to be quite catastrophic for kind of a couple of weeks or whatever, a couple of days. And then I thought, like, I'd be ill, I'd be having fits. And, you know, waking up at this time of night, you know, 7 o'clock at night or whatever, thinking, what the fuck happened there? And then I'd leave it alone for a while, and then I'd just go again. But what I realised is when I was using it in the final days, it was like tantrum using it. It's like I couldn't control. My life was unmanageable. My thoughts were unmanageable. So I didn't know. I couldn't articulate it with a talk about what was going on with me. I didn't know what was going on with me. It's like Viv says, I couldn't give things a name. I was just angry, or I was sad, or I was this, or I was that. I didn't know, you know, I didn't have any lingo to talk about what was going on with me. So, but what they was explaining to me was the thing of powerless. You've got no power of negotiation over this. Once you start, you're in, you know what I mean? And you're always trying to do a deal. You're saying, I'll use this drug, I won't use that drug, I'll use with this guy, I won't use with that guy, I'll use the weekends, I'll use when I go abroad. You're always trying to negotiate and cut a deal with something you don't have any power of negotiation over. You know what I mean? You're like when you have a craving. And when you use, you don't get rid of that craving, you intensify that craving, you make it worse, you create a craving when you use. Does this sound familiar? And I said, yeah, this sounds really, really familiar. And then I don't give a fuck what I do to get the next one. I don't give a fuck who I upset. I become quite feral and quite animalistic when I use. And I surprise myself and I think, where did that darkness come from? You know what I mean? Because that's not me. But it's that addict who's just going to go through people just to get what they want and steal from people and say, what's your fucking problem? I'm bullying my mum, you know what I mean? And in blackout, I punched my mum in the face one time. You know what I mean? I never want to forget that. And I never want to be okay with that either. I never want to say, oh, that's what addicts do, they punch their mum in the face. You know, and that's what we do. I want to kind of remember that. That is where I go when I use. You know, because that's what stops me from going back to that very dark place. So, but I was always trying, like I say, to negotiate with something I couldn't negotiate with, you know what I mean? Now, I'd walk past pubs, and I'd say, I'm going in there for one drink. I'm just going to have one. And I would have passed the lie detector test. If you'd put me on a lie detector, I would have passed. You know, maybe one drink, then I'm going home, going to watch Match of the Day, and put fucking whatever, little fucking bit of pie in the oven, eat a fucking pie, go to bed, you know what I mean? The next thing you know, I'd be running around, you know, and by this time we had this shop up Camden Market, and it was about 88, 89, and things was happening, people doing these, and I was doing these, and it was all getting a bit fucking mad and all that, and I still like just to get like a bottle of vodka on the way home on a Saturday night and just go out and drink a bottle of vodka, because the big day down Camden was Sunday. So when we was in there, people during the week would come in and say, look, could you put these flyers, could you tell people this is where it's going to be good on Saturday night, you know, warehouse party, something like that. Okay, can do that. So then I'd go to work on Sunday morning and people would say, and I'd say to people, what was that party like last night? And they say, you was at the party. That's the man with you. You know what I mean? I said, oh, right. So there was no doubt tumbling around. And no, John, he was really here and he was quite funny. But I couldn't remember being there. So I thought, this is, I'm on fucking dodgy ground now. You know what I mean? I'm fucking possessed. Or I didn't know what the fuck was going on with me. You know what I mean? So it was like, I was very scared of myself at the end. And so anyway, like I went to this meeting and the guy's talking about your powerless, you know, you've got like no power. And I think in this room tonight there's power, you know what I mean? It's like when we do the readings, we go to society, it's the society of men and women who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. That's what it is. So I've got backup, like Vivian was saying, I can pick up the phone to about 100 people. Whether I will or not is a different story, you know what I mean? But I've got the resources now to stay clean, but there I was just like some mad kid, you know what I mean, like 31-year-old man who was at a 30-year-old's head, not knowing shit from ice cream, you know what I mean. And I used to think, how the fuck can these people help me? How can they help me? You know what I mean? And nowadays, I've got an app on my phone. It tells me twice 7 years, two months, 2 days clean. And I think I need all the help I can get, because my head is a funny old mechanism, you know what I mean? Now, I think, right, my head, an addict's head is like the Apple Research and Development Department. He's always thinking up new ways to fuck you up. Yeah? That's not working. You need to think up something new. It's 27 years. Yeah, but. You ain't got, have you? You ain't got. What about that geezer in you? Doesn't show you the respect that you deserve. Maybe we should blow up his house. You're in Waitrose, you've got all my pesto sauce, that's really nice. Maybe I should just throw it over the aisle. See where it lands, you know, just make all stop. You know what I mean? All a nice life, you know what I mean? I live a really nice life. I'm going to try and do about 25 years in about 10 minutes. I was, again, like what Vivian was talking about, I think as addicts, right, what we come in, I'm very reluctant to get well. I'm hostile to people who want to do me a bit of good. I'm hostile to the truth, hostile to reality, hostile to responsibility. I don't really want to go there, you know what I mean? The steps for me break it down. They try to cut it up into kind of chewable chunks. You know what I mean? It's like, I think if you want to eat an elephant, you've got to chop it up really small into chewable chunks and then put it through a mincer. You know what I mean? Chop it up as small as you can get it. Then I can do days at a time. I can do days at a time. I can make the next phone call. I can do the next whatever I've got to do. I needed to ask for help. I didn't realise how much help I needed. You know what I mean? I was looking at my step one. I was thinking, you know, like, whatever. I'm not very good at asking for help. I was 20 months clean when I went into treatment. I went into treatment because I thought I'd get a council flat. But when I went into treatment centre, they started saying to me, okay, you've got to move that table. The table would be from about here to that wall over there, and you can't do it on your own. So you have to fucking ask people for help. There's no way. So I had to start asking for help, talking about my stuff. And I was one of those guys who tell you nothing. But once you got me over the tipping point, bang, you have everything. I tell you everything, you know what I mean? And the step two was about hope. It was about, this could work for me, you know, I'm not special and different. This, you know, this will work for me. And step three was about, for me, accepting that I'm lovable, that I deserve this, that I deserve the love on offer. You know, I had to think about, completely had to think about that word God differently. You know what I mean? Because I had all this religious stuff. And I think the word God is over here. And I think the word religion is up the street, 10 miles away. Religion to me is like, don't get me started about religion, but this is a spiritual program. This is about me working out what makes me tick, how I can improve, what I've got to accept, how I've got to accept other people, how I can move out of situations. I tell more people to fuck off and jog on in recovery than I ever did when I was using, right? You know, so that's not acceptable anymore. So either change your tune pal or fuck off. Do you know what I mean? I wrote about myself extensively, you know what I mean, because I like writing about myself, you know what I mean? I wrote this thing. When I brought the step four into the room, I was doing, step five with the guy, he went, what the fuck is that? And he says, step four, and it's like a telephone directory. You know? Everyone I'd ever met or had any kind of relationship with or interaction was in there. Well, you know, I resent you for loving me, I resent you for not loving me enough, I resent you for not loving me, I resent you for anything, anyone, you know, but it's all my mates, everyone. Well, I resent them. I didn't like people. I thought I was a cool cat. I thought I was a bit of a dude. Hated everyone. You know what I mean? Didn't even have to meet you. You know what I mean? So I'd slag off people and think, get halfway through and think, I've forgotten the name of the guy I'm slagging off. What's his name again? You know what I mean? Just unlike people, you know what I mean? But that's changed, you know what I mean? I've given a list of 16 defects, you know, and totally explained what each one was. You know what I mean? And then here's the thing, this is a funny thing. The guy said to me, you're a perfectionist. I says, I'm a perfectionist, aren't I? He says, yeah, you're a perfectionist. how do you work that out? And he says, oh, I do everything perfectly. He says, no, you don't do anything. I said, what do you mean? He says, you will not do things in case you make a mistake. You won't say things unless it's the wrong thing. Do you know what I mean? The shame will kick in if you think you're making a mistake. Do you see what I mean? So you just won't do anything. You know, that's perfectionism, that fear of making mistakes. Everything's got to be perfect. You know, someone says, oh, you know, this is my mate Tony. Yeah, it's a nice guy, but, you know what I mean? It's a bit like that. So everyone, you know, I land on the, on their defects, if you like, you know what I mean? Self-pitious, arrogant, can't be told, I know best, you know what I mean? All these defects, you know, give them a name and kind of sort of move them on, and, you know what I mean? Start breaking them down. Thought, you know, that's me being arrogant, that's me, cheers, Tony. You know what I mean? And just start breaking them down and moving and coming to meetings and, like, you know, taking a bit of feedback and talking a response, you know what I mean? But all the time having this kind of reluctance and resistance to kind of, you know, being the person that I could be, you know what I mean? Because I'm an addict, you know what I mean? And after that step five, the guy said to me, he said, look, you go through life, John, and you've got, like, you're like a guy going through life, and you're in a car, and there's smoke coming up from the bonnet, and you don't know why, but then you work out that the handbrake's on. You know what I mean? And you just need to take the handbrake off and go and live your life and start going, fuck it, if you make mistakes, you make mistakes. You know what I mean? Now, I'm a writer, and what I realise now, if there's, you know, like Miles Davis says, no mistakes, no art. There is nothing without mistakes, you know what I mean? You find stuff through making mistakes. If you said to me in the 27 years, what would you do wrong? Well, what would you do differently? I'd say, I'd worry less, right? And all them old times to tell you the same, I'd just worry less, you know what I mean? Which you have to, you know. And I'd make more mistakes. I'd just make more mistakes, you know what I mean? Because, you know, I won't die if I don't make a mistake, if I get it wrong. But when you're writing, you have to kind of write, and you find something that you think, no, this is paid up, this is great. You know what I mean? And then you get in touch with, you know, you get in touch with your own creativity, you feel great, you know, all the stuff, you know, that you kind of think, well, I won't show that to people, you know, because I wrote a short story many years ago, one of the first things I ever wrote, and I was going to mail it to this friend of mine, and just before I put it in the mail, there's no internet back in them days, I thought, I'll take that bit out, because it might be a bit dark or a bit sexual. So I can't remember what, but it's something. I thought, I'll take that out. We'll think I'm a nutcase if he reads that. And I thought, no bollocks, I need this to catch the mail. And I mailed it to my friend Johnny up the other side of the country. And he read it and he said to me, you know, the bit I really liked was the bit, it was the bit I was going to take out. And it taught me that that's the kind of unique bit that I need to kind of, you know, not be scared of my darkness. You know what I mean? That's step six, step seven. You know, acknowledge your darkness. If you want to walk, you know, if you want to walk in the light, you've got to walk, you know, you've got to walk through the darkness. You know, this program will hold you when you walk through the darkness and say, oh, I'm capable of murder. I'm capable of a lot of dark stuff. You know what I mean? And so, I made amends to people, you know, some of it was good, some of it was bad, you know what I mean? It was like, it's all ongoing. I have this own, my own little mantra about step 10, and I kind of say, I continue to take personal inventory, and when I'm safe, I probably admit it. When I'm safe. Because I have to kind of say to myself, look, I'm safe. Because what happens with me is that's when I get a bit dingy and a bit, when I'm not safe, when I think I'm not safe, and I have to kind of say, look, I'm safe. Do you know what I mean? And life on life terms has been difficult and it's been great. Charles Dickens in Tale of Two Cities, he says it's the best of times and the worst of times. And that's been my recovery. My best friend died 3 years ago. A very good friend of mine died just before Christmas, hung herself. I'm baffled by both of them deaths. It's that thing about living life. The steps and the people in these rooms will help me kind of like negotiate through life. And what's very important to me is, as much as I've learned in these rooms, I've learned a lot. I've unlearned a lot about myself. I've left a lot behind. I've dumped a lot. You know what I mean? I thought that doesn't apply to me anymore. Do you know what I mean? I'm brand new every morning. You know what I mean? I get up and I am that man. I look in the mirror and say, I'm that man. You know what I mean? I am the man I want to be. You know what I mean? I make choices. You know, life's good. Pain will come again because that is the nature of growth. You know what I mean? It's like at the moment it's all tickety boom. It's summer. It's great. I've got readies. I've paid my tax. Don't get me started about them clowns, fucking politicians. Because, but it's good. You know what I mean? If you're a newcomer, always remember that everyone comes to these meetings. Everyone has to come for the first time. Everyone's a little bit scared when they come. Everyone's a little bit, you know, what the fuck's all this about? Well, all the last person on earth would ever think would go to meetings. Because I sit in meetings, I've got mates, and I think, well, he's the last person on earth. He's far too cool for these meetings. He's too clever for these meetings. He's too whatever for these meetings. We're all the last people on earth. We all come, and it works, and it's phenomenal. Thanks for asking me, Ian. So it just goes to show, I didn't want to do it, and now I can't, I don't want to go on. It's nice, it's getting warmed up, the tide's giving. Cut. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much.